Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 16th day of January, Anno Domini 2021, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. On Tuesday, Microsoft released updates to plug more than 80, that's 80 security holes, in its Windows operating systems and other software, including one that is actively being exploited.
That's actually down. It's usually over 100 every
month. Exactly. 10 of the flaws are in Microsoft's most dire critical rating, meaning they could be exploited by malware or miscreants to seize remote control over unpatched systems with little or no interaction from Windows users. Most concerning of this month's batch is probably a critical bug in Microsoft's default anti-malware suite, Windows Defender, that is indeed seeing active exploitation even as we speak, or at least as I speak. Microsoft recently stopped providing a great deal of detail in their vulnerability advisories. That's not a shock, so it's not entirely clear how it's being exploited. Another critical vulnerability this month is a remote code execution flaw in nearly every version of Windows, and I mean every version, that earned a CVSS score of 8.8, with 10 being the most dangerous. They classify this vulnerability as low in complexity, meaning an attack could be easy to reproduce. However, they also note it's less likely to be exploited, which means it's counterintuitive. Without full context of this vulnerability, which is a good thing, we have to rely on Microsoft to make the decision for us, which is a bad thing. That vulnerability is actually just one of 5 bugs in a core Microsoft service called Remote Procedure Call, or RPC, which is responsible for a lot of heavy lifting in Windows. Some of the more memorable computer worms of the last decade spread automatically by exploiting RPC vulnerabilities. The remaining 70 or so flaws patched this month earned Microsoft's less dire important rating, which is not to say they're much less of a security concern. Case in point, an elevation of privilege flaw in Windows 8 through 10 and in Windows Servers 2008 through 2019. Unfortunately, this type of vulnerability is often quickly exploited by attackers. Separately, Adobe released security updates to tackle at least 8 vulnerabilities across a range of products, including Adobe Photoshop and Illustrator. There are no Flash Player updates because, thankfully, Adobe retired the browser plugin. I think beat it to death with a stick is the right way to put that. In December, hallelujah, and Microsoft's update cycle from last month removed the program from Microsoft's browsers. Windows 10 users should be aware that the operating system will download updates and install them all at once on its own schedule, closing out active programs and rebooting the system, unless you ensure Windows has been set to pause updating so you have ample opportunity to back up your files and or system. Please back up your system before applying any of these updates. Windows 10 even has some built-in tools to help you do that, either on a per-file or folder basis, or by making a complete and bootable copy of your hard drive all at once. You never know when a patch roll-up will bork your system or possibly damage important files. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Microsoft patches over 80 security holes. And your choices are, I'm already patched, I'll patch right now, I pause patches until I know they're safe. Patches? I don't need no stinking patches. And yes, I know that's not the real quote. Windows. And of course, other. So far, we have about 22 votes. Only one person said patches. I don't need no stinking patches. And yes, it's not the real quote. And like I just said, I know that. I don't mean just the badges part. The real quote is badges. We ain't got no badges. We don't need no badges. I don't have to show you any stinking badges. On the other hand, everybody knows the other quote, so we use that one. At any rate, please vote in the poll. And I know you'll have more to say on this because I know you all. So if you do go to soundbites.org, scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under the poll discussion is 16 Jan 21, Microsoft patches over 80 security holes. There's only two posts in there right now, so you can join me and Larry. yeah, Larry says, yeah, he's still loving his Chromebook. Get off the roller coaster. I don't deny that. And then, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Or, of course, text us at our text hotline, 585-205-8887. It's good that Microsoft is updating their systems. That is a requirement, let's be honest.
And let's see how long that lasts.
Well, yeah, but updating them is one thing. Updating them without issues has never happened.
I was gonna say, having them do it correctly, that's the key word.
Yeah.
That, again, it doesn't turn your machine into a glorified brick.
Right, right. Yeah, and that's why we say always, 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 always back up your system at least twice before you do any of this stuff.
Because they just don't have a good track record.
No, they
I
really
mean,
don't.
Everybody's come, unfortunately, has come to expect that, you know, they're, you know, when even they were saying, oh, their virus protection or all this other stuff that they were going to do. They do it for a while, and then they abandon it because, oh, there's not much money in it.
Right.
And it's not making a little bucks. So, again, they're trying to find out all these ideas, and it goes to what we were saying last week, like on the phones. Phones have gotten to the peak now that there's not many new features that they can put out there.
That's right.
That is going to cause a massive drive. Oh, because let's face it, they don't have the days like back when Windows 98 came out. And remember, people were standing at line at midnight waiting for it so they could buy their that version, go home and install it. You just don't see that anymore nowadays. It's everybody's got their tablet or their laptop. And now with Chromebooks, you know, it's so simple and they don't have to worry about it getting crashed. Or getting the viruses or the spyware or the malware.
Yeah, I was using my Chromebook the other day, and suddenly I saw the little notice that said reboot to update. And I didn't bother because I was in the middle of a thing. But the next time I turned it on, it took an extra maybe 3 or 4 seconds before it booted up. And when it did, boom, it had all the new stuff. So it went really nicely. I've never had a bad update. I've only had one issue ever with a Chromebook, and that was a hardware issue. So I had to restore the operating system, which only took a few minutes. I mean, it really was, not
I had
a big deal.
Same with mine. I had to do a reset.
Yep.
And it didn't take me long at all.
No. And then everything just comes back up. I was also pretty pleased this week. I know we need to get to phones, but I don't want to say this. I remember last week I said that now that I have hearing aids, I'm hearing things that I hadn't heard before.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized one of my drives was making crunchy noises. So I bought a couple of solid state drives, a 1 terabyte and a 2 terabyte.
Sucks.
I put them in this week.
Wait a minute. Let's step back. How bad was the sweat fest?
It was a lot of sweating and a lot of swearing. I even taught myself some new words.
Folks, if you've never seen it, Nick goes into panic mode.
I do.
Just you turn the machine off, and you put a screwdriver in his hand, and
I don't want to.
The panic comes over him. I've seen it.
It's visceral, and all I had to do was change a couple of hard drives, and even I know how to do that. But the problem, of course, for me was those tiny little screws.
Yeah,
and I have arthritic hands, so I spent a lot of time dropping them. But I put a towel down so they didn't go far, and they were right on the towel. And so that's all right. But I finally got them changed. And then I've said this before. I created something called a psych book the last time I turned this machine. I set up this machine. So all the swearing and errors and finding the little tricks and doing all that stuff. I just had to follow the list. Boom, boom, boom. And I got it set up. So I've got the 1 terabyte SSD for booting and the 2 terabyte SSD for my data. And then externally, I attach the 2 terabyte solid spinning hard drive, regular hard drive, so that I could move everything over. I mean, I've got it in 100 places, but I had it right there.
Mm-hmm.
And that way I could move over some temp files that weren't really temp, but were still in the temp directory and a couple of other things. So I moved all that stuff over and I've started putting stuff back in again. And I'm loving this new machine. It is fast. It's the same machine. I mean, you know, it's an i7 and it's a 3 gigahertz and yada yada, 16 gig of RAM, 8 cores. But with these SSD drives,
they make a difference.
Holy moly.
You can really revitalize an old computer by putting an SSD in it.
Yeah, you're just making the access a way it can get to the programs and everything else, which is a strain on a computer.
And all the OS loads. The OS is always loading and unloading little files all the time.
You'll notice, folks, when you're booting up a machine, how those hard drives, if you pay attention to it, especially if you got a desktop unit, you'll see it flashing a lot. Because it's accessing those hard drives and searching for it. And the SSD card drives can just find it a lot faster.
And because my system drive and my data drive are separate, when I'm loading a program and it needs to load a piece of the operating system too,
it's boop.
They happen simultaneously. So there's no wait for that.
Yep.
And of course, I've got 16 gig of RAM, so I'm not using any of my swap space.
One of the bad things with SSDs is they don't make a noise before they die.
Yeah, that's true.
And the surprising thing is they die about with the same frequency as spinning drives.
5 years average.
Just for different reasons.
But that's where it'd be smart for folks, like we've said before. You keep your programs in it on your boot drive.
Right.
Put data and anything else that's vital to you off on its own separate drive. And like you just pointed out, Steve, with the SSDs, I mean, at least the other drive, if it's a standard drive, which, there's no sense of wasting the money on a SSD to hold data,
I did, but
yeah,
just because I wanted to.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you're looking, if you've only got one drive and you want to, separate stuff, then that's where I would tell folks, all right, add that new drive, put your operating system on that, put all the programs there, leave the data on this now D drive.
Right.
And have everything go over to the D, and then that way if you're backing up to a cloud system or another backup system, because we tell you to do at least 2 or 3 of them, it can just say, grab that whole drive, copy it over.
And back in the day when we needed our swap drives, our swap space, nothing made a machine faster than adding another drive that just did swap.
Swap, yep. Mm-hmm.
Because, again, now it's not interrupting loads from the system or loads from the data.
Right.
Anyway, we should probably get to the phones. Poor Fred has been very patient. Fred from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Fred. What's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm listening to your saga about the tiny screws, and I'm feeling the pain with that.
Oh, yeah.
I work on a machine that has a, or machines, plural, that have coolant sumps that are water-based oil, water-soluble oil, slimy, can't see. And invariably, there's a screw that drops in there someplace. And the only thing you can do is stick your hand in and feel around for it.
Yep, that's exactly right.
I talked to you last week about a program that was not functioning correctly, and I had a little bit more information. I did update the drivers and checked out the cables. And what I'm finding is this is a software that can be put on the hard drive anywhere you want it.
Is this the CNC stuff?
Yep.
Yeah.
You can run it from the desktop. You can run it from a subfolder someplace. It does not have to be loaded into a program file. I have two of them because I'm working on two separate machines, and it's a low level program, so it doesn't do like some of the $10,000 ones that'll do 50 different machines.
Sure.
But it works. It just takes two ports USB. What I found was I was trying to it stopped. I went to do something, and I generally have just one or two things running in the background. You know, my Chrome might be open. I might have a Adobe PDF open, and so I decided, let me take a screenshot of this and you know, maybe send it to you via Ask Nick. And by the time I got all that, it went back to working.
Interesting.
So what I found is if it does what it does, and it just kind of like seizes up, if I just walk away from it for a minute or so, didn't really put a stopwatch on it, but if I just walk away from it, it'll go back to running absolutely perfectly fine. I don't leave the programs open. You know, I open it, transfer a file to the to or from, and then close it. So it's not a matter of, you know, been sitting open for a while. It does not matter whether it's a send or receive. And it does not matter whether it's the one that's directly connected from the 9-pin adapter or the one that I put the USB extension cord. Both of them doing the same thing, and random, and not, you know, maybe once a day, maybe just a couple times. No, I can't seem to pin it down to a rhyme or reason, but I did note that if I just, okay, don't do anything with it, just don't get panicky, because a couple times I went to a task manager and closed it out. If I do anything, click on it, it get not responding. But if I, even though I get to not responding, if I just get up and get a cup of coffee, it works just perfectly fine. But there's some sort of a reason that it's got this delay, and it's only been since using it on the new Windows 10 PC that the company installed.
It could be one of several reasons. It could be that it's doing garbage collection. I don't know much RAM you have in that new machine. But it's also quite likely that it's trying to access a port that no longer exists on the new machine. That existed on the old machine, doesn't exist on the new machine. It goes and tries to find it, and eventually gives up.
Time's out.
Why would it, without doing anything, no other...
Because that's the way programs work. They often go out and check a port.
So if the program was set to look on COM3 for your machine, and now it's on COM2, because if you're running adapters, it might be like that.
Right.
So it'll try.
It wouldn't work at all. One, in the settings of the program, there's only the ports that are available are the only ports that show in the list.
Okay. Then I don't know.
And if it was looking for a port that didn't exist, how does it fix itself without me even touching it?
It gives up looking for that port, moves on to the next port, which does exist.
Okay. Yeah, because one machine is connected to COM1 and the other one is connected to COM2.
Right.
And, you know, when I started the machine up, I had you pick one or two. And that was it. That's all you've got because that's what you're plugged into.
Right.
You may be able to look in the process viewer and see if there's a process you don't recognize or don't know using all the CPU while that doesn't work.
Or if there's a config file for the program, look and see if it thinks there's something on another port that you might not be using, but it thinks might have been there at some point.
Okay. I could try that. As a matter of fact, by the time I went to the task manager one of the times to just close it out because it's not responding, by the time I got the task manager open, it cleared itself and worked just fine. So.
Yeah. It might, like I said, it could be doing garbage collection. It could be looking for something that's not there on a particular port. It could be doing any one of 50 different things. And only the people who wrote the program could tell you what that was, or at least look in the config file if there is one and see if it's looking for something on a port that you no longer have.
In the what files?
The configuration file for that program.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
And it's only happening on the Windows 10. It never happened on the Windows 7.
Right.
So, all right. Well, let me give those couple things a try and see if I find anything that's worth calling you back again.
Yep. Okay, thanks, Fred.
Thank you.
Yep. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Sometimes, particularly with a proprietary program, it's very difficult to know what's going on in
with the keys and everything else.
I wonder if it would help to set it to Windows 7 compatibility mode.
Oh, and have it
does that, maybe. Yeah. Does that still exist in Windows 10?
I don't know that.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't had to use it.
One of the things I have not yet done, and I have to do it this week, is redo VirtualBox so I can bring up my Windows 10 virtual machine. I'm wondering if I can just move over the files and have it magically work. That would be lovely.
Yeah,
it'd
be
it's a single VM file. Just point the program to the new location. Yeah,
worth a try.
Worth a try. Can't hurt.
Yeah, no.
It's just everything moves over at like 100 megabits a second because it's going through USB 3.
Yeah, it's.
So, you know, it doesn't take a lot of time to move stuff.
Yeah, a vast improvement.
Yeah, because I'm hooking up SATA 3 to USB 3. So, you know, anywhere from about 95 to 150 megabits per second. And, of course, the bigger the file, the faster it moves because it's not doing a lot of the housekeeping and overhead and stuff that that involves starting a new file and all that other stuff.
Finding the header and the end of file.
Right.
All that other stuff.
Right, and setting up the stuff in the directory and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So moving big files like the ones that come with VirtualBox should be pretty fast, actually. So I'll probably do that this afternoon.
Well, that's one thing talking about SSD cards. That's what's in my backup drive. The one backup drive that I have on my network. And that's what I love about it because I also set up another folder on there so that three of my computers can all talk to this one file that I use. And it's so fast. You know, just as far as asking, you know, connecting to it because it uses SQL Lite.
Right.
And it's lightning fast the way it just shuffles in and out and updates. Each one of them could be getting, say, a confirmation in, and it quick updates it. Boom. That is fast, though. Makes me want to think about maybe doing it on my regular machine.
Well, and that's the thing about those things, isn't it? Once you get started with that stuff.
Yeah, it leads to other.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. With Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415, or text us at 585-205-8887. We'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
And I'm Steve Ray.
It is 36 minutes after the hour, and we are sound bites. And we have a question in the YouTube chat, as a matter of fact. Hey, fellas, Happy New Year from Will in Hampton, VA. The most intensive activity I do is streamline YouTube video. I am considering 120 gigabyte SSD from PNY for $20. Your thoughts, please. PNY, not my favorite vendor. I think they're not bad. I just they're low end.
And sometimes there's a problem with buying too cheap where it wears out faster.
Right. You might spend a few more bucks and get a, a slightly better, SSD card.
I've always liked,
as a backup device, as a secondary device, maybe as a carry around device. Probably not a bad thought at all. I have a number of PNY.
They're real big in flash drives.
In flash drives, yeah. I have a couple of PNY flash drives. And they don't they're not as robust. They don't last as long as some other brands. But again, for as a backup, as a carry around, that sort of thing, absolutely. But I don't know that I would make it a main drive.
No, definitely not.
And even if all you do is YouTube streaming, it's still booting Windows, and your boot time will be significantly faster. Opening and closing apps will be significantly faster with an SSD over a spinning drive.
Right.
Yeah, and PNY is one of the noted lower-end drives. I forget the different specifications on micro SD cards, but there are a number of them that are rated a lot faster.
Yeah. There's sort of two ways to do an SSD, and you'll sometimes see this in the specs. There's SLC, single-layer cell, and an MLC, multi-layer cells. A single-layer cell means that every cell of the memory is either a 1 or a 0, so 1 bit per cell. And that makes it really fast. But companies have figured out how to lower pricing by doing multi-level cells. So every cell, it might be 0.3 volts, 0.6 volts, or 1 volt. So you could get 3 bits per cell or 4 bits per cell.
Mm-hmm.
And that allows them to get more bits for the cells, which makes the drive cheaper.
And denser.
It's not quite as fast.
Right.
But it does end up being a little bit cheaper. And sometimes they can be too cheap. I've read of some drives are trying to put 6 bits per cell, and so trying to differentiate between 6 voltage differences between 0 and 1 is tricky.
That's...
And so actually, what's happening now is drives are relying more on error correction for routine operations, not just when the drive starts to die.
Right. So I'm not, like we said, not entirely sure I would. I would make that my daily driver.
Yeah, no.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Brian from Gates, New York. Hiya, Brian. What's up?
Hello, gentlemen. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Nice to see you. Doing well. I got one observation and two very quick, stupid questions.
Okay.
I was on Zoom with a friend yesterday who was just one guy on the other side of town, and it was nice. And he made an observation, which I experienced this morning when I was on a different Zoom session with 15 people. Of course, the screen is all loaded up, right? And the guy yesterday made the observation that when we were growing up many years ago, there was the Muppet Show. And the opening of the Muppet Show at the end of the chorus, all the characters showed up on the screen in little tiny boxes.
Yep.
So the Muppet Show got us ready for Zoom meetings.
Exactly right.
Hollywood Squares and the Brady Bunch.
I will admit, when I'm in any sort of video chat meeting with a lot of people, the Muppet theme song plays in the back of my head.
Not too much, or we'll have to pay for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Actually, Dave, look in the system. See if it's already in there.
Yeah, right. So what are your questions?
Right, quick, stupid question. I've got a Chromebox that I use my primary machine. But I old Apple habits die hard. Old Windows habits die.
Right.
Never. I plugged in a USB to get some files and move them around. And, geez, I can't figure out how to close it. Remember you just got to close out the drive before you withdrew it?
Safely remove hardware.
Right.
Yeah.
So what you do is when you put in an SD card, if you open up the Files app, right, so that you can see the files and move them from one thing to another, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Next to a removable drive is a little up arrow.
All right.
It may look like some keyboards have the same up arrow printed on them as the eject key as well.
Right. And if you, that is the eject symbol. It's an up arrow with a line under it. And if you click on that, it will then close out and eject the thing so that you can remove it.
And often if you right-click on the icon, there'll be an eject message in the menu.
Mm-hmm. Eject, okay.
Yeah. Right, yeah, also Control-Shift-E will do it.
Right.
If you're on that drive.
If you're on that drive, right. Okay, I figured it was something simple like that.
Yeah.
I I'm stupid.
No, you're not.
No, I just haven't done it before.
Right.
I got a nice little Christmas present, which is one of these photo frames.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Very nice. It'll hold, you know, 10 million files of good-sized photos and videos and things like that. But, of course, the instructions are all written in Windows.
Yeah.
And so I don't have Windows.
Right.
So I get a little confused sometimes. It says, on your computer, open File Explorer, and in File Explorer, enter the FTP address in the address bar. Well, I did find the FTP address, but I can't figure out where the File Explorer is.
It's another word for your desktop,
basically. Yeah, basically, if you're looking to open an FTP, you can
just go to the address bar.
Okay,
you know.
So there are two ways.
FTP.
FTP, yeah. File Transfer Protocol.
All right.
Is this frame? Let me ask a couple questions about this frame. Does it have a SD card that you can remove?
You supply your own.
Right. So if you've got an SD card, if you can transfer files using an SD card, then you don't need an FTP program. All you need is that SD card. You put that in your Chrome box. Using the File app, copy all the pictures over that you want. It may need a particular folder. I don't know. You'll have to try. I mean, that part will be the same. But
it'll be a fresh thing that dedicate for photos.
Right. But so you can move those files over and then properly eject that from your Chrome box and then stick it in the frame and you're on your way.
Yeah, all right, I'll give it a try. What the heck? All I can do is burn the house down, right? It shorts out.
Well, that would be something that might happen, but it should be unlikely.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, it's a low level of probability, but, you know.
I've seen some of those photo frames that have an email address, and so you can email a photo to it, and it shows up.
If it runs on FTP, then it must be on a network.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the...
You'd think it would have a web server in it, too, that you could upload into.
I think. But if it has an SD card, you can just pull the SD card out of that. Again, turn it off first.
Yeah.
Put it in your machine, copy all the files over, eject it properly, put it in the frame, and you're done.
Okay. We'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. Keep a fire extinguisher handy. You should be all right.
Yeah. Well, I've got some of the pictures I had on my phone... I was able to transfer that way. The phone would do it. But, you know, I don't have all of, you know, 400 pictures on my phone.
Right.
So I'm looking for a better way to do it quicker from my Chrome box, where all my photos are living up in the cloud.
All right.
So this would work out because you can only do, through the phone, you can only do six at a time.
Oh, right.
So that would take a while. So, yeah. All right.
So, yeah, you should be able to just wherever they – so when you put the SD card in your Chrome box, take a look around and find those pictures and then put all the other pictures in the same place.
Right. Yeah, to tidy it up.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right. Have fun.
Yeah, I'll let you go bother somebody else now.
Thanks. Bye.
How long have you known him?
Way too long. That was best man at his wedding.
Including him.
Including him, doggone it. Absolutely right. I got to tell a story about that. We were doing Three Penny Opera at the time. And most of the people, of course, in the cast were also at the wedding. And there's a part of the show that has a wedding in it. And so, unbeknownst to everybody, when I gave my best man speech, at one point I just raised my glass, looked at everybody in the room, went, to the happy couple. And just automatically they all went, yay, hooray.
Huzzah.
Well, that was the line, to the happy couple, yay, hooray. And of course, in the show, they're not enthusiastic. Yeah. So they were not enthusiastic. They were just like, yay, hooray.
And there was much rejoicing.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. What's up, James?
Yes, I want to ask you, I bought a Kindle Amazon FireWire 7.
Yeah.
I use when I go to coffee shops and, you know, use public Wi-Fi. I've had it since December, and it worked fine up until, I guess, the past month. It started working slower and slower, like when I type the email, it types out really slow. And then also the YouTube, it plays like 3 seconds at a time. I'll dial up, some video on YouTube, and it's working very slow. And these are the same places I go to, the same public Wi-Fi. I'm wondering if there's something needs to be cleaned out on it, or I'm wondering if there's something affecting that.
Yes. It's likely that your Kindle Fire is getting full. So if you can, like, if you're reading a lot of books or downloading a lot of files or that sort of fare, you'll fill up that Kindle Fire. And once it starts filling up, it uses a lot of swap space because there's not a lot of RAM in the thing. And it has to keep screwing around to find space to put stuff, to load more stuff. So if you can remove from it all of the books that you're no longer reading.
Okay, yeah.
But that's, that's pretty much the first part of it. You can also wipe out your cache partition. The cache partition is the space that the operating system gives to apps for storing temporary data. It's usually not necessary to deal with this, but sometimes it makes a difference. Particularly for one that you've been using a lot or one that you haven't been using for a while. I know. But what you do is you turn it off, and then once it's off, hold both the power and the volume down buttons, and you'll see Android Recovery. The dirty little secret of the Fire tablet is that underneath it's Android. And one of the choices on that will be to wipe the cache partition. And don't hit. Now, unfortunately, wipe the cache partition and wipe data factory reset are right next to each other. Make sure you get the right one.
Yeah, be careful. Take your time.
Yeah, you want wipe cache partition, not the other.
Have you done a cold boot recently, though? Just turning it off completely and turning it back on?
That's not a bad thought. Start with that.
I've done that. That works somewhat, but it's just working slower. I mean, it's just slower. When you're typing an email, it's really
And it's either the cache or the simple fact that it's running out of RAM. Also, uninstall any apps you don't need.
Oh, okay. Because on the old Macs, they recommended clean out your cache or something that.
Yeah.
You needed to do that, and I've forgotten. It's been so long.
Yeah, same idea. Also, don't install your apps to the SSD card. Those are much slower than the internal RAM.
Oh, okay.
You can also turn off Alexa if you don't use, Alaska on your...
Too late.
Right.
Yeah, I don't even know what that is.
Well, but it's probably on, and that takes some time. So under settings...
The voice assistant.
Right. Under settings is, I'm going to say the word, so everybody cover up your devices. Alexa, A-L-E-X-A, and you can turn that off.
Oh, okay.
If it's on.
I will do that because I didn't even know what it was. I thought it was something you could purchase or a way you could buy.
No, it's built in and a lot of people use it. It's like Google Assistant or, Bixby or any of those things, Siri, any of those things. You can ask it questions and get something approximating an answer. But if you don't need it, you turn it off and it won't be using your cycles. It won't be using your space. It won't be doing any of that stuff. So there are some tricks that you can do to possibly at least make them faster. I mean, Fire tablets are slow to begin with, but they shouldn't be that slow.
Okay, yeah. But it was working fine, and last summer. We've been working fine. Could watch videos on YouTube fine. I mean, no problem. I mean, it just started getting slower.
Right. It's probably the cache being full. It might be that you have too much, too many apps or too many books, too much data. Or it could just be that an update took more space and that took up your extra space. So don't forget, the operating system takes some of that space too.
They've got a Silk browser that they say you can open in Silk. I mean, is that the browser that they use for the?
I believe it is. Yes.
And you can't download. I tried to download, Google Chrome, and it wouldn't let me do it. Or I don't know if you're just allocated to only using Silk, or I don't know if you can download another.
You can only download the stuff that's in the Amazon store. Right. I mean, there are ways, and we're going to start hearing from the tech heads about this.
Yeah.
There are ways to turn your Fire tablet into a real Android tablet.
And we don't.
I'm really not going to get into that here. Yeah. I've done it on a couple of my own, but it's an involved process. Yeah. So you can, in general, only load the things that are in your Amazon store.
Yeah, it's an amazing device. I wish I knew how to work it better. It's an amazing little tool for the money. I mean, it's really, really, really handy, and you can take it through small, and it's not like a phone. You're not going to be bothered with the other stuff. It's really, but there's a lot of tricks to it. I'll try those two, but that sounds like a good idea. I'll try the two that you suggested and see how that goes. That sounds like a good idea for that. It reminds me of my old Mac, stuff you had to do with my old Macs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cleaning out the cache or something.
Yep.
Like that.
Yeah. A little housekeeping once in a while can do wonders.
Yeah. I figured you'd do some spring cleaning or something.
There you go.
Computer, there you go. That's right.
Steve's looking up a website right now, and he'll post it in the Soundbites forum, and you'll see in just a few minutes.
Okay. Great. Okay, I'll look that up. I'll look that up on your site. That sounds good. Okay, well, that helps a lot. I mean, that's two things I can do.
Yep.
That will help and everything. It's just like there's no instructions with most computers. You have to look it up. You have to know where to find it.
There's a lot of stuff you can do, but you really have to know how to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the first things is you go to the bookstore and you get one of the free books on how to use the thing you're trying to use.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You can download a Kindle book on how to use a Kindle.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And a how-to book.
I know.
Yep. All right. Thanks, James.
Thank you, guys. All right. Have a good one. All right.
Have fun. Bye.
Take care.
Yeah. Yes. And like I said, I've got a couple of Kindle tablets. I tend to buy we're going back to Woot again, but I use Woot a lot, and it's now an Amazon company, so every once in a while you see last year's Fire tablet models at like 50% off or 70% off or something ridiculous. And so I've got a couple of the older models that I can carry around, and it's nice to leave one by this TV and one by that TV and one at the kitchen table, and so if you're looking stuff up, you can look stuff up.
Yeah.
But it's they are, as Kindle devices, useful but limited.
Yep.
Because many of the things you want to do, if you're a person who lives in the Google ecosystem, you really can't do a lot of things that you normally do. So I have taken several of them and turned them into real Android tablets, but that is involved and tricky and sometimes just bricks the device. So I'm never going to tell you how to do it. But in terms of using them as Kindles, there's still a lot you can do. They're very fine devices, but they are as prone to problems as every other operating system. So you still have to clean out the cache. You still have to worry about how much stuff you've got loaded. And they don't have a lot of RAM.
No.
So if you're as avid a reader as I am, and you've got, 1,000 books sitting in your library, that's probably not a good thing to have on a Kindle.
Yep. Speaking of those, did you see the latest YouTube video talking about Alexandria there?
No.
There is a young lady out there right now that is doing a great job of, she's got the voice of
Yeah.
The A-lady.
Alaska.
Down to T, and she's using it against spammers.
Oh, nice.
And she does this whole, like, four-minute bit that she, first she goes into one voice like she's an older lady. And the older lady's telling Alex there to shush up. And then Alex would come back and say, you know, blah, blah. It sounds just like it. And then it's frustrating the heck out of the spam caller.
Nice.
And she gets them on the line, and she's got them going for at least 4 or 5 minutes.
Oh, I'll be looking that up.
And going back and forth, and she's using these two different voices. And it's hilarious. I mean, it's a good one for her. I mean,
yeah,
I just sat
her.
There and laughed. Well, we got about 30 seconds here. We did have a couple texts come in, and I have... Let's see here. One of them, it says, I have a Synology NAS and I'm upgrading the hard drive. The NAS is in a small space. Can I move it into an open area to do swap and manage the changes with my laptop that has a disk station software on it?
You should be able to do anything you want with it. It's just a piece of hardware. If it's connected to the network in some space.
Well, I say a lot of times the Ethernet port connects it to the network. The USB port on the Synology is to connect a second hard drive. You may not be able to connect it to your computer as a hard drive. It has to go over the network.
Oh, Synology. Yeah, maybe. So, yeah, you might not be able to. You're going to have to look through your manual to see which version of the Synology you have and whether or not that will work. All right, that music tells us that we've wasted an hour of our lives with this nonsense. But hey, we're not that bright. So I think we're all going to come back and do it again for another hour. So we're going to take a slightly longer break, but we'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. You are halfway through this edition of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right, it's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member supported. Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. We'll be right back.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We are hurtling, 7 minutes after the hour. Time flies.
Hey, we're having fun. Don't forget it.
We're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest running computer. I knew we were having something. I didn't realize it was fun.
In the script.
Right. Shh. We are having fun. Oh, boy. It's the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Before we get to the phones, the text message that we had just before we took a break, the person with the Synology NAS, you did say it was in a small space, so make sure that it's well-ventilated.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing kills a hard drive faster than heat.
Heat.
We also had a text of what is Bixby? And they said, what is Android Bixby? It is not Android. It is a Samsung product that essentially is their assistant software, like Google has Google Assistant and Apple has Siri and Amazon has Alexa. The Samsung has a thing called Bixby. And if you have a Samsung phone, it comes with Bixby. If you don't, you're lucky. If you don't have Bixby, you're lucky. Bixby is junk. So it's not something you ever want to play with, ever, ever.
Well, you do if you want to get frustrated.
Oh, yeah. Or do very little.
But have a little time. You got a lot of time on
you. It does control a Samsung phone well. Mm-hmm. I will say that for it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Dave?
Hi, guys. I'm calling about a Chromebook issue. My Acer, I was having problems, so I did kind of a hard power off. And my wife can sign on, do her stuff, no problem. When I try to sign on, it just goes blank. So there's some glitch in there somewhere that's not hardware related. So I was hoping that you could help me out.
Well, what seems to have happened is that, you see, each person gets their own sign on, their own little section. Of the system.
User account,
thank you. And when one is not working, there's been, obviously, as you said, some glitch in that one. What you can do is log in as the other one, remove the bad one, and then add the bad one back in again. Did that make sense?
Yes. I'm assuming that it won't affect any of my downloads or anything like that.
Well, it might. It depends on where you saved them.
Right, and usually it's in the drive, my drive.
Right, so
well,
if it's
on your Google Drive, it's okay. If it's on the local drive,
right,
it may be lost, but usually you can re-download things again.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's all on the Google Drive because I haven't really seen or played with anything that would remotely get me to a
right. Anything that's on the Google Drive will always be there. You know, that's out in the cloud,
right.
and the only way you can remove it is to actually delete it.
Right.
So if you can't get to it, you certainly haven't deleted it. If it's on the local drive, then it would be gone when you wipe out that account. But if it's on the SSD card, then it should be accessible either through your wife's account or on another computer somewhere, whatever. You really you've got 2 out of 3 chances of getting all that stuff back.
Yeah, and I don't use the SD card, so that's not a problem. Okay, great. I'll try that. I have one other quick question that
sure.
I think I know the answer to. In doing a clean out of old stuff, as we are wont to do every 10 years or so,
sure.
I came across 2 boxes of games. One is Lucasfilm's Their Finest Hour, The Battle of Britain.
Okay.
And the other one's Borderbund, The Ancient Art of War at Sea. And I still have my 3.5-inch drive for a floppy. Is that something that Windows 10 will let me run, or I just throw them in the trash?
I was looking up the Windows 10 compatibility mode is still there, but I don't think it goes back that far.
Yeah.
If it's a bootable floppy with DOS already on it.
Yeah,
maybe.
Were these DOS games?
Oh, I think I think they were.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so in the floppy days, most of those games were just bootable floppies. And you hoped you had 2 or 3 floppy drives to be able to keep several disks in at once, but you could just try booting the disk and see if it does.
There is a program, because Windows 10 doesn't really have DOS in it anymore.
Yeah, no.
They call it DOS, but it's not DOS.
Mm-mm.
However, there is a program called DOSBox, DOSBox. And I don't know if it's available in the store, or you'd have to download it separately, but it is specifically designed to play DOS games.
Well, actually, come to think of it, Nick, this is not, I don't think, a DOS. It was copyrighted in 1989.
Okay, what, so it might not be.
It may say Windows, on, yeah, yeah, it may say on the box what its system requirements are.
Yeah.
No.
On the side panel, it usually says system requirements.
Right, so there are two things that it could be. If it's a DOS program, you can run it with DOSBox or VDOS or one of those emulators. Or if it's a Windows 7 or higher, you can run it as an emulator. You can run it in emulator mode. That might work. Nobody's ever going to make promises that the emulator mode works.
Looks like it's an XT.
Okay, so that's DOS. Well, no.
No, that's still Windows. Windows XT, XP.
Oh, XP, he said. I thought he said XT.
Windows
IBM
XP. PCX.
Okay, and Windows XP. Now it's a crapshoot as to whether emulation mode will work. I'm sorry.
You can find an old cheap computer and put it on that.
Sometimes you need that. We had a customer this week bring in a 17-year-old computer that had their company's entire financial program on it. And they needed us to fix it so they could finally move to a new program, but they needed all their old data.
Yeah, right.
After 17 years, it finally took the computer dying to get them to move to a new
program. Because even if you can get, say, an older computer with Windows 7, you could put that program on there because of Windows 7 still had the compatibility mode. So you could load the program in there and play around with it. And you can probably pick up, you know, if you really want to play those games in there, another used machine, Windows 7 machine, for a couple $100 probably.
No.
So you had a little bit of interest in possibly running it if it was easy, but it's not something you're going to pursue.
As you can tell, I probably bought it, looked at it, maybe loaded it, and played with it once or twice. And I'm not a gamer, so I just kind of put it away in the back of a drawer, which I finally found.
Put it on Craigslist for $50, and you'll find
somebody will buy it. Yeah. Some collector.
Yeah.
And there's so many other games now that you can download in the game store that, you know, whether it's flight simulators or card games, or they're all out there.
There's
and
a bunch
free.
You can play online for free. You might even find the same games at archive.org where you can play them for free.
I just typed in archive.org to look.
There you go.
Yeah, the Ancient Art of War at Sea is a DOS 3.1.
Yeah, there you go.
DOS 4.0 was the best.
Yeah,
so, I still remember DOS 6. That's about DOS where 4 I started.
DOS 4.0 was the only one that came out and didn't have to have like DOS 4.1, 4.2, 4, and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
So if it was up to my wife, they'd be in the trash by now. But I thought I'd give you a call to see if I could resurrect it.
There's a pretty big online community keeping old hardware alive and old games alive.
Well, like I say, you can be a hero now and say, "Honey, I finally made the decision," and go over to the trash and just throw them out.
Right. Yeah, you can also find a bunch of them at myabandonware.com. Again, you have to be able to run it as DOS. Now, one of the things that I know you can do is in VirtualBox, you can run DOS.
Yep, DOS window.
Right. So you can create a DOS computer in VirtualBox to run stuff.
And it would run so fast on a modern computer that it wouldn't know it was DOS. It wouldn't know it was emulated.
Right.
See, I have an older computer that I was going to put Linux on it. That's another story, but haven't gotten that yet nailed down. But would it run on a Linux type of?
Well, again, platform? Only through the emulator.
Yep. Somebody asked, what's a VM? It's a virtual machine.
Yeah, virtual machine. You can create, essentially, you create a computer inside your computer.
Fakes it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you have enough RAM, then you say, let's say you've got 8 gig. You can give it 4 gig or 2 gig. Or if you're a DOS machine, you can give it 1 gig, and that's more than enough. So you can you can run another operating system inside your operating system. So let's say you're running Windows, you put in VirtualBox and you can play with Linux. Or if you've got a Linux machine, you can run DOS or Windows. I still haven't got around to playing with trying to load the new version of Catalina, but those are the things that you can do in those boxes. But beyond that, I can't. You know, there's no magic, I'm afraid.
Oh, okay. Well, that's to be expected.
Now, yes, apparently, the Ancient Art of War at Sea can be played for free in the browser at the Internet Archive.
Nice.
Really? Okay.
There you go.
And Steve is looking at it frantically right now. So, yeah, there it is. You can play the Ancient Art of War at Sea.
Originally for Macintosh and DOS in 1987.
Yep. And there it is. And Steve's going to put a link. Everywhere was the... published by Broderbund. And Broderbund published everything. And there's also the Ancient Art of War and the Ancient Art of War in the Skies. And all of those are available there. All right, thanks.
Thank you.
All right, have fun. Yeah, there's lots of stuff. The Internet Archive has a whole bunch of games, original DOS games, original Mac games, that can be run right in your browser. You don't have to download anything. You don't have to install anything. You run them right in your browser. They're not going to be insanely fast, but then the games weren't insanely fast to begin with. And they are games from the early 80s. So... don't expect...
When 8-bit was extremely expensive.
8-bit was king.
Yeah.
Don't expect great graphics or great gameplay, but they're there. Well, the
pixels might blind you.
Yeah, exactly right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. What's up, Dennis?
Hey, guys. I'm transitioning to a Chromebook from my old desktop.
Nice.
Because I know you guys have been recommending them, and now that I'm retired and I don't need all that firepower.
Right.
But I'm trying to learn the system and all that, but I want to run Firefox on the Chromebook.
Sure.
So I tried just downloading the app, and it didn't seem to work. It wouldn't even let me log in or anything. So I checked the Mozilla website, and you said, hey, just, go into Linux. So I activated Linux on the Chromebook. That was pretty good. And I'm in terminal mode, and I went through the instructions to install Firefox on Chrome.
Right.
And they said, let's see, start the terminal and do a flat pack.
Yep, flat pack install Firefox.
Isn't it easier just to install Firefox from the Google Play Store?
I did that, but it would not let me log in. It would, I kept putting in my account, my account information and my password, and I almost got the feeling that it was looking for my Android password, but I don't have an Android.
Well, you don't need an account password to run Firefox.
No, you mean to download it, you couldn't. You needed an account and password.
You don't need that either.
No, but I'm trying to bring all the stuff in to sync it up.
So it downloaded and ran, but you couldn't log in to download your bookmarks.
Yeah. Okay, so that has nothing to do with installing the program.
Right. The program is installed and runs. It just you didn't get.
And you can open web pages and browse around.
Right. Yeah. Right. He wants to make his stuff. So that particular thing that it's looking for is your Firefox username and password.
Yes, and that's exactly what I put in every time, and it just refused to take it.
What was the error message?
Wrong password, wrong login information, over and over again. And I got like three passwords for Firefox. You got the account, you got the sync, and I got the primary that protects all your passwords.
Right.
So, I tried all three. I just kept getting locked out. So anyway, I went to Mozilla, and they said, hey, the best way to do it is to run it from Linux.
Well, you're already running Firefox, so you don't need to download and install it any other way. It's already installed and already running. So you've got a different problem that right. we're trying to solve.
So if you went to accounts.firefox.com/sign-in and tried to sign in with your Firefox information, what was the error message?
That it didn't recognize my login, especially the password. It was just too weird.
I can only suggest one. Well, generally you get that when either the username or password is incorrect, or you don't actually have a login account at Mozilla.
But first of all, I do have a login account because it's right. on my desktop, and I use it all the time.
Right. I'm saying those are the two
things. So I couldn't.
It would help to know the exact wording of the error message because that would point us in the direction that we need to go.
So that's why I decided. Well, I'd go this Linux route, and that's not working either.
Right, because the problem is not installing the program. The program already is installed.
Right, you actually were running it in Chrome, so that worked. What you couldn't do is log in to get your data, and so that's really a separate problem. That hasn't got anything to do with running the program. So let's concentrate on what the program problem is. So if you're having problems accessing your Firefox account, one of the choices you should have had was a verification code. When you put in your username and password and it didn't take your password, you can have it send you a verification code, either an email or wherever, and that should then let you in.
I tried that. I did try that, and I never got an email.
Did you look in your spam or junk folder?
Yeah. Yes, I did.
Are you giving it the right? Look, I know this is simple, but one of the things that I often see that people do is instead of a period, they put a comma in the email address.
Yeah, I hear you, but I didn't do that.
Okay.
I had a customer yesterday saying, I've been trying to email my husband photos from my phone for 2 years, and he never gets them. So I look, and she's doing rochester.com as his address.
Just rochester.com.
Yeah, no, it's rochester.rr.com, and then he got it. So for 2 years, whoever owns that name at rochester.com has been getting these photos because it never bounces back as undeliverable. They never said you're sending photos to the wrong person. They just kept taking the photos.
Well, they were fun photos. Yeah. Anyway, at some point, I don't know what to tell you without actually looking at your machine, but in general, Firefox is running correctly in Chrome, but B, if you cannot log in, you just need to make sure that username and password are correct. One of the things that you have to remember is that there's no uppercase lock on a Chromebook.
Yeah, I understand. So I'm not using it after multiple attempts, I was pretty convinced that I wasn't making any typos or anything. I've been doing this for a while, so
right.
So it just seemed.
So when you log into your account on another machine, that works.
Yes.
That username and password work. They just don't work on the Chromebook.
Right.
I honestly don't know what to tell you because I've done that myself and it works fine.
Yeah, I get you.
That's very weird.
Is there a shift lock that maybe it's the shift characters, not the number?
There are ways to do it, but also you should be able. Doesn't this have a little eye where you can see what you're typing in, the password?
Yes.
Yeah, and so if you look at that password before you hit enter, you should see whether or not it's correct. And that, if he's doing that, then it isn't that. I honestly don't know. The only thing I might suggest you do is uninstall it and reinstall it again from the store.
Okay.
It may have just glitched installing. That's certainly not an impossibility.
It's weird that if browsing works, the login should work.
Yeah, it really sounds like the issue is at the other end, but I don't have anything else I can say at this point.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now, one more question.
Sure.
Chromebook question. Okay. I'd like to print, but evidently my printer is not recognized by the Chrome OS. And there's a generic, what do they call it, PDP file?
Yeah.
You can generate a PostScript file. So I went to, it's a Brother printer, so I went to the Brother site, and they have a script that will generate such a file that you can put on your Chromebook. And, of course, they say, well, if you don't see this script, then your printer is not supported. So is there any other generic that I can use?
Brother has apps in the Google Play Store that will let you print from Android devices and Chrome devices.
Ah,
so you might
okay.
want to check the app store for the Brother device. They do that on the iPad too.
Right.
So where some of they haven't made a generic driver, but they write an app for every OS. Oh, just make a generic driver.
Yeah, you'd think that would be the easier way to do it, but apparently it isn't.
All right. So I could just go into the Apple Store, hit Brother, and search.
Yeah, the App Store. Look for the Brother printer. Look for your specific Brother printer.
Okay.
All right. We got to take a break.
All right.
Thanks
a lot, guys. Take care.
Good luck. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 on Soundbites, member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Okay, we had one text question come in before we get back to the phones. This person has an internal SATA drive. Is it compatible with a laptop? Yes and no. Any drive is compatible with...
He just came back with, right, duh, my own
answer. Right. The point is, if you have a SATA connector inside the laptop, then yes, it will be compatible. SATA is SATA is SATA, but it depends. Is it SATA 1, SATA 2, SATA 3, yada, yada, yada. So that's important. And now back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Rochester, New York. What's up, Mark?
Yes, I have a Windows 8.1 laptop, and for as long as I can remember, it has been very cranky about Windows updates.
Yeah.
By cranky, I mean that I get updates. I install them. It says they were installed according to the update history, but it is quite often the case that those updates don't appear in the list of installed updates, and whether they appear or not, it's not at all unusual for me to get a notice that I've got more updates, and there are the same updates that had been previously apparently installed, saying that they need to be installed again.
Yeah, okay, so a couple of things. First, how much free space do you have on that machine? Disk space.
You're talking about disk?
Yeah, disk space.
Oh, quite a bit. Just a moment. Let me open the, what have we got here? Free space, 466 gigabytes.
Okay, it's not that. Okay.
So possibly relevant is that quite some time ago I noticed that the Windows modules installer worker would often fire up and grab most of the resources on my system. So that was before I changed the update settings to just download. That didn't change it, so I've turned them off completely. I check regularly every patch Tuesday. I take a look, if not more often. But that didn't stop Windows Modules Installer workers from doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Don't know if that's related.
Well, okay. First, support for Windows 8.1 is diminished considerably from what it used to be. But there is still some help. There are some things you can try to run to fix. These kinds of issues with 8.1.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, rather than give you a whole list of things to write, Steve mm-hmm. is going to post a link from Microsoft Tech Support in our forum.
Okay.
And for now, at least, those answers are still there. At some point, Microsoft has said they are taking down all support for Windows 8.1. But right now, at least, that's still there. So you're kind of lucky about that. What you essentially kind of have to do is essentially reset the Windows Update components, because something has...
Yes, that involves, I think, deleting a particular folder. And then it's recreated, and I seem to recall doing that quite some time ago. It didn't help. But
there's a program. Well, first you got to scan your drive with Scan Now, and then there's a program called DISM, which you have to run, which theoretically will clean up a lot of that stuff automatically for you. And again, rather than give you all of that nonsense here, Steve is posting a link on our website.
I will look for it.
Give that a shot. We'll see what happens. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks.
Yep. If the machine can run Windows 8, it probably can run Windows 10.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You might want to back up your data, erase the drive into a clean 7. Windows 10. Yeah, or go back to Windows 7.
Yeah. Which Windows 8.1 is just...
That was that middle stepchild that they pretty much ignored.
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone hated 8.0 because it was so tablet-focused, a tablet and touchscreen. Right. That a lot of people skipped it. So 8.1 sort of shifted the focus back as a desktop machine, but by then the reputation of 8 was lost.
Right.
And then they skipped 9 completely to go to 10.
Right, exactly. I don't know what they had against 9.
How bad was 7, 8, 9?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. How bad was 9 that they had to skip the whole number completely?
Yeah, exactly. Because you know they made one.
Yeah.
They were probably making it more tablet-based. And when the reception for 8.1 tablet was so bad, they just went, you know what? 10.
Never mind.
We're going to do 10. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Cheek.
Towaga, New York.
There you go. What's up, Joe?
Well, you talk about backups often on the show. Like, you can't have enough is one of them.
Yep.
Something that's probably equally as important, though, is every once in a while test your backups.
Oh yes,
I like to quote the story Steve relates every so often about. Oh yeah, I've been backing up. Well, what they backed up was shortcuts, which don't do you any good. And the other thing is hard disks are so cheap these days, even SSDs. Might as well get a couple, and every once in a while, you say to yourself, oh, I'm going to pretend my hard drive failed, and I'm going to see if I can recover from that and actually produce a bootable system. Us professionals call that disaster recovery.
Right.
So, something that's kind of important to do, because if you have backups that aren't viable backups, they're useless to you. You got to make sure they work. Otherwise, it doesn't even have to be that involved, too. You can every once in a while say, oh, I need a previous version of this file. I'm going to go to my backup and see if I can find that file and bring it back someplace else. Maybe not write it over the original, but, bring it back to another directory.
Right, exactly right. At the very least, that is the thing you should do. The fact that you have a backup, the fact that you think you have a backup doesn't matter. You need to have a backup, and the way you determine whether or not you have a backup is to do a restore of something.
Yeah, and you can always just put in a flash drive and have it restore to that flash drive a few files.
Right.
Select a few files on your backup and have it say, go put in a flash drive and say, yeah, restore them back to this location.
I've got some documents that I haven't really looked at in a couple of years. Every once in a while, I restore one to my temp directory just to see if it showed up.
Yep.
And then I can read it. And you just do that every once in a while. And I realize that means suddenly you're actually having to pay attention to your machine and do all this
think
stuff.
Think about stuff.
But you can do it, and you can, in fact, do it pretty quickly and easily, depending on your backup system. So, those are good points, Joe. Thanks.
Yeah. You guys have a great day.
Yeah. You have a great Saturday yourself. Bye-bye. Yeah. Oh, I should mention our friend Jerry Seward, the great Jerry Seward, mentioned that today is Robert W. Service's birthday, the great American poet. There are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. The Arctic trails have their secret tales that would make your blood run cold. The Northern Lights have seen queer sights, but the queerest they ever did see was that night on the marge of Lake LaBarge. I cremated Sam McGee. Great poem. Dan McGrew. He wrote a bunch of great stuff. Very funny stuff.
This show has really now got me going, thinking about an SST.
See, you want one. You know you want one.
Oh, I do.
And I'm telling you, I you buy it like a $30 enclosure that connects it to USB 3. Then you put that drive in the SATA to USB 3, put it in the little enclosure, throw it on your Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, but see, I can't stop there. What I'm thinking now is, which I've done already, is I've taken a Raspberry Pi, and Nexton is a company out there that has different size screens.
Yep.
And they've got touch screen models, and you can get them all the way from 2.5 inch all the way up to, I believe now, 7 inch.
10 inch. Not from that company.
Okay. Well, I've seen the 7, and there's so many folks out there that write different programs and all these and that are out there for it. And because, like, I have one for my All-Star Note and my DMR notes, and it just sits there and runs a program. A lot of folks have designed screens around those different types of networking, and they're really nice because you touch the screen and do it. I'm thinking, do this Raspberry Pi, put the screen on it along with the external the drive, because it can power it up off of that, off the USB 3, and have it as a backup drive. But yet I can still see, because of the screen and running that on the Raspberry Pi, be able to access and make sure that it's doing the backups and if there's any other stuff I want to do.
But for everybody else in the planet who just wants a backup drive.
But that's fun. Playing around. Well, that's the whole thing. That's the thing with the Raspberry Pi. You're not talking.
Well, but what I'm saying is you don't even need a Raspberry Pi. For the rest of the universe, many of the routers nowadays have a USB 3 connection that lets you plug in a hard drive. So you buy the SSD card, you buy a $30 enclosure to USB. Make sure you get the SATA 3 drive.
Yep.
And then the enclosure does SATA 3 to USB 3.
Yep.
You plug that into the back of your router, and it shows up on your network as a backup drive. You are done.
Yep.
For everybody else.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of anybody else, because we were telling folks at Christmas time, you know, if they want to get something that's inexpensive and play around with, here's another project.
Right.
And it's all ties together in that we've been always telling you, backup. You never have enough of them. Well, here's another project that you can, you know, do with that Raspberry Pi. And again, you know, serve as another device that's even doing, you know, keeping your data safe.
Right. But for people who don't want to play around with the Raspberry Pi but do want backup.
Yeah.
If they've got a router that has a USB 3 connection on the back.
I think my orb does.
I think your orb does.
Matter of fact, did yours just get some updates?
Yes.
Yeah, I had to do firmware 3 updates, and it was great because Greenlight just did. You know, had to take their network down. Perfect. They're going down. Had it redo the thing so that when it rebooted. All the new firmware and everything else. It was great because I just log in and, you've got these. Please, look at it. I love it. You know, it makes it so simple for us.
But for people who are just looking for backup, if you've got a USB 3 connector on the back of your router, you could buy a USB, a SATA drive, whether it's solid state or not. You could buy a USB 3, a SATA 3 drive and a SATA 3 to USB enclosure for it, plug that into the back of your router, and it will automatically, for if the router is designed for this, it will then automatically show up as a drive on your network. And then you can set up your backup software to just go to it automatically every time. That's a great way to get a new backup on your system without having to do a lot of work and without costing a lot of money. So give that a
Just a quick look at it. It doesn't look like the Orb has...
I don't know if it does or not. I thought it did. Maybe it doesn't.
I just set up a new Eero Wi-Fi 6 router for a customer. And in the previous Eeros, each Eero box had two Ethernet ports on it. So you either had one in and then one out to plug into your computer, or you could use it as a wireless bridge. The new Eero Pro set that I put together, only the first one had the two ports, because one you plug into your router, your internet router, and then it creates Ethernet. The other two didn't have any Ethernet ports on it, and I was annoyed.
Yeah, I'd be annoyed.
That's probably how they got them a little cheaper.
Well, exactly.
So they're Wi-Fi beacon. You know, wireless is convenient, but Ethernet is much more efficient.
Yeah, it's much faster. Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be better to get an enclosure that has built-in Ethernet on it. Then you could plug it right into your network.
Well, you could do it that way as well. Exactly right. Assuming, the thing about plugging it into USB 3 is that the software in the router recognizes and sets it up automatically.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you have to set it up yourself in some way.
Hmm.
But it would work, but you have to do some setup then, usually. It doesn't just automatically show up on the network.
Hmm. Whether you can go, because it's showing on the Orb that it's got the network connections on the back of it.
Yeah.
Whether you could get a converter that goes from network to USB 3.
I'm sure you can. But again, now you've got to set up the software somewhere to do that.
You can get one that goes the other way. Ethernet to USB, not USB to Ethernet.
Right.
Depending on which direction you're going. So you can get a USB to Ethernet adapter. So if you have a USB computer, you can plug Ethernet into it.
Right.
But generally, if you have an Ethernet device, there wouldn't be a USB adapter to plug in a USB device into it.
Yeah, there are SATA to Ethernet adapters.
Yeah, so that will let you plug in your raw drive to the Ethernet.
Yeah,
right.
That's exactly right. That'll be right on my network.
But again, it won't show up until you do something with it. There's some software that has to be involved. And that's where the router, if you could plug... Generally, the USB connectors are recognized by the router and automatically set up on the network. That's my point.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I'm just trying to think of with what I have.
Right.
With your box of spare parts, what can I make?
Yeah.
Boy, exactly. Ain't that the truth.
Yeah. Well, hey, one of my, on my third radio, I wound up getting, pulling together a bunch of old parts that I had. I had an old case. It was still, a nice black case. I put that together. I had a motherboard and again, it's running Windows 7. I don't care. It's only running ham programs. It's not on the internet. It's not, going out there and searching stuff. All it does is run this one program that it gets its stuff from the radio. And it just reports it and writes it out to this file out on my network. It doesn't go out on the network.
Right.
And that's why I don't worry about it that, yes, it's a Windows 7 machine and it could be hacked and all that. I don't have to worry about that because it doesn't go out there. It stays within my own internal network.
Right.
So it's not going anywhere. All three machines stay right there. The only thing that goes out is my Chromebook. That is connected to the network, and I do all my email and banking and everything else through that.
Here's a box. It's a portable NAS drive. It looks like the drive, it's got a 1 terabyte drive in it already, and it's wireless. And so I suppose you just hook it up to power and bang, but it does have an Ethernet port. And I suppose that does it all for you, so you can really pretty much do anything you want to do with it.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And that's only $160, and it seems to include the 1 terabyte drive, which makes sense for that price.
So what goes right on to The wireless?
It says it's wireless. NAS external wireless SSD, but it also has an Ethernet port, its own Wi-Fi hotspot, external solid-state drive, personal cloud storage, smart storage, auto backup, phone, laptop, wireless, yada, yada, yada.
Who's it by?
SSK, whoever the hell they are.
I've been going through Amazon. We were talking earlier about looking at webcams, and there's a $17 webcam, but there's only 14 reviews. But they're all positive.
Yeah.
So then I'm looking at the $30 webcam, and there's 1,000 reviews.
Yeah, right.
Why, you need another webcam?
Yeah, I want to replace that Venus one there. That's
hold off. I've got one, an extra one at home.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not using it. The one I found, my old one from Microsoft, and I've been using that for my one meetings, and I had ordered this other one. I want to get it dirt cheap. You know, but it's a nice camera.
Yeah, I've been looking at the 2K ones, moving up from the 1080p that we're doing now.
Yeah. I'll try to dig that one out, and I'll bring it next week.
All right.
And just use it.
We joke about how riveting three guys in a radio studio are on video.
Yeah.
Let's go to a 4K video. Actually, I did see a 4K camera for $50, which isn't too bad. It's one of those where it's almost too cheap.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. That's it. That music tells me we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. View52 says Acer Chromebook 315 Touch? Yes, I think. Depends on what you want to do with, but it's a nice machine. But we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I'm probably going to have to thank Steve Ray, whether I want to or not. I'm Nick Francesco. Thanks to everybody. Thanks to everybody who called in put stuff in the chat and every place else. But we are done for this week. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's right. You've been listening to two solid hours of sound bites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member supported Jazz 90.1. Be good to one another. We'll see you in just 166 hours.